Welcome back to America's leading higher education podcast, The EdUp Experience, where we make education your business. Hosts Dr. Joe Salustio, Elizabeth Leiba, and producer Elvin Freites bring you the brightest and most influential minds in higher education today. We explore innovations, ideas, and issues in higher education and beyond, and hopefully have a little fun along the way. Now let's get to it. If you're experiencing any level of marketing challenge right now, you've got to ask the hard questions and you need answers. Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your future students? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience and future students will respond to? And are you spending more time building reporting than listening in on what your students really want? All of these questions will get answered when you sign up for your free consultation with MDT Marketing. Head to mdtmarketing.com/edup, submit your information, and talk to MDT. Don't go it alone. Find the right partner. The guys at MDT, the team at MDT is absolutely amazing. Whether your challenge is the cost of inquiries, your melt, your branding, the bad and incomplete information that come with your inquiries, whatever it is, an audit of your challenges will help your institution, and it's free. mdtmarketing.com/edup. Welcome back, everybody. This is the EdUp Experience, where we make education your business, interviewing the brightest and most influential minds in higher education and beyond. We do like to have just a tad bit of fun along the way. It seems like we're having more and more fun the more episodes we do. My name is Dr. Joe Salustio. Always with me, the one, the only, Liz.
I love how you say that. You stretch it out and draw it out. No last name, just Liz.
Well, let me tell you why I do this, Liz.
Why do you do that?
Because I've come to find out recently that your middle name is Angela.
Yes.
And so can you imagine me introducing you going, here, the one, the only, Angela. It just doesn't have the same
ring. Yeah. So stick with Liz. I like it.
Yes. And I didn't know this about you. So when you said my middle name's Angela, I went, how could you possibly, I mean, you must be comfortable with it because you know, immediately I'm going to grab it and bring it into a recording. You must have known.
I realized that, but it's kind of like it is somewhat of a running joke on LinkedIn about Angela as my alter ego. So I'll roll with it.
So do I now need to ask prior to each episode, who I am getting? Am I getting Liz, or should I start doing an intro for Angela? Because based on your mood for the day, or are you Liz all the time and Angela comes out when in certain moments?
I would say 99% of the time I'm Liz, so we'll stick with Liz.
I got it. Well, my middle name is Costandinos. So
you're lying.
I swear.
Are you making that up?
No, it's K. It's actually officially in my birth certificate. It's K. Period. Right, but. Growing up, it's after my Greek. I'm half Greek and half Italian. So after my Greek, my grandfather, his name was Costandinos. So it's after my Greek grandfather, his name, Costandinos.
Wow. That piece of trivia will remain memorialized now because that's super interesting.
So before we get to our guests, I'd like to say that when people found out about that when I was young, they used to make fun of me, right? Oh, Costandinos, because it was long and foreign and all this. So I'd go, growing up, I'd say my middle name was Kevin.
Oh, no.
Kevin.
So you
that was easy to understand for people.
And took on a different middle name so that people Kevin. Would make fun of.
Wow. Right, so when my mother and father found out that I did that, my mother and father started making fun of me for changing my name to Kevin. So I could have went either way. My dad growing up, he'd go, oh, there's Kevin.
Wow.
Shout out to dad. Thanks a lot, dad.
So we got Angela and Kevin in the building.
And it's Kevin and Angela, we're going to do this.
Interesting. Okay, let's do it.
Well, let's talk to this guest we have on today. She's got an unbelievable name. And speaking of names, of course, that's a highlight.
An unbelievable name and an unbelievable resume to match.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Her name is Dr. Kenya Ayers Palmore, and she's president at Tarrant County College. Kenya, how you doing?
I'm fabulous. How are you both?
Well, I think we're doing okay so far.
You sound good.
Well, you sound good. You, for whatever reason, you just have the absolute best voice I've heard on podcasts.
Her voice is beautiful. I definitely agree with that.
Thank you.
I think you should just read us something.
Let's just stay there and not talk middle names. Don't ask me. And we're
I'm going to ask you, but I feel like I should just, you could read me a book passage and I'm going to go grab a pillow and relax. Like, because I feel like your voice is going to just put me at ease.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Very nice. Thank you.
Well, let me ask you first, because, you know, we always like to do, we do like a little bit of research. What do you say, Liz? A little bit of research, because we like to keep it pretty, keep it 100 over here. We do a little
Yeah. We do a prep, but we don't go to all over the place, just because we want to keep it organic, for sure.
Sure.
On your LinkedIn, you've got a little snippet that says that you catalyze leaders of the future. I think I can't remember the exact words, but I found that to be really cool. That I haven't heard anybody put it that way before. That you're purpose or part of your mission is to catalyze future leaders. Can you talk about that and what that means to you?
Sure. So I do feel it really a call to help leaders go from where they are to where they have the potential to go. So often there are leaders who see themselves, they're aspiring to something more, but they feel stuck. They don't know if they have what it takes. They are in a place of self-doubt. And so I see myself as tapping game-changing leaders and helping propel them forward, really helping them tap into their own authenticity. And higher ed just needs a lot of great leaders, and it's not just our sector, but it's all across multiple sectors of opportunity. And I feel blessed to be able to work with a lot of people in that regard.
That's great to hear. And, you know, we all, I think in as educators, we all have a somewhat of a passion, some more than others, for really creating that change and meaningfully, as meaningfully as possible. Well, you end up here at Tarrant County College as president. Talk about your work a little bit. I mean, you're in an urban, large urban city, right? Fort Worth, Dallas, Texas, I don't know what they call it, a dual city or by city. It's kind of like one major city.
Are you ready for this? It's a metroplex.
Oh, I was
How about
ready.
That?
Metroplex. Yeah. I love it. So you're in a metroplex of Dallas, Fort Worth area. Mm-hmm. You're serving students from all populations, from all ethnic backgrounds, and diversity, right. Equity, inclusion is there. Mm-hmm. How critical is access right now, given everything that's happened? You're in a big city. So, you know, it's sometimes we get some presidents on that are from smaller rural areas, not as many right in the heart of a large city. So talk about that work for access.
So let me give the context of how large we are. We're one of the largest community college systems in the country. We serve on the credit side credit students. We serve about 52,000 altogether. We serve about 100,000 students across our district in any given academic year. Access is vital. We understand that we are opening up opportunities for students and for families that we serve to help change the trajectory of families' lives. So we know that with great intentionality, and the both and piece is it's access and completion, and it's a joy to do this work. I love it. I'm living my dream. Really.
I can hear the passion in your voice.
Do you hear it? Good.
Absolutely. And I love that, because we've been talking about over the course of the past year, and especially over the past few weeks, the role of mentoring, coaching, and developing leaders. And I think it's very much of a passion for us here on the podcast, as well as for me personally, individually as a Black woman working in higher education. We don't see as many women leaders. We definitely don't see as many Black women and other women of color. Mm-hmm. I saw that you participated in the ACE, you were ACE Fellow in the Millennium Leader Initiative, I believe is the name of it. Can you explain a little bit more about that program specifically, and just in general, why we need more attention to programs that develop women and Black women and other women of color in higher education?
Liz, thank you for the question. It's something I'm really passionate about, and I don't get to talk about nearly often enough. I've written about it and been interviewed about it, but I still could talk about this all the time, that representation matters, and that if we're not at the table, it's a very different conversation. I often say that even though I'm an introvert, that it doesn't matter. I have to push past sort of my personal comfort zone, because I'm a voice for the voiceless. I'm a voice for the marginalized. And the conversation shifts because I bring a different lens of experience to the dynamics of conversation, to policies, to the kinds of things that we're thinking about as an organization. So I've, you name it, probably I've done it. It makes me think about Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In, where she talks about women and how we often almost over-prepare because we second-guess ourselves. But the best professional development I ever did was the ACE Fellowship. It's through the American Council on Education. It is the premier leadership experience in the country, and it's an immersion experience. I left my college in Illinois. I was with William Rainey Harper College in Illinois, went away for a year, had a chance to learn under Dr. Renu Couture, who is and has been for years highest paid woman in higher ed, one of the most dynamic women. She's chancellor of the University of Houston system, and she's just a rock star personally and professionally. And so I spent the year working in her office, shadowing her, doing projects, learning the ropes of the presidency so that I could step in with confidence into the role.
I have a question because that is so salient, I think, to just how important it is for us to have access to those kinds of immersion leadership experiences. Mm-hmm. What do you think higher education can do as a sector, I think at individual institutions, to duplicate those types of programs? I think for myself, I've taught and worked at several institutions across higher ed in different, you know, community colleges or career colleges. And a lot of the times there isn't really a formalized structure, a program for mentoring, for coaching, or for leadership development for women and also women of color. Do you think we're paying enough attention to that? And if we're not, what are some things that you could suggest or maybe recommend for leaders that are listening that they might want to think about as we go into this upcoming year? We're all kind of, as a country, reimagining, I think, what we need to do in order to ensure that we have equity at all levels, whether, especially in higher education, whether we're thinking about student success, whether we're thinking about faculty, whether we're thinking about leaders. So from a leadership perspective, what do institutions need to do better to nurture our talent?
I love that. It's loaded, but it's really juicy. So let me unpack it. The first part, are we paying enough attention? Not consistently and not at scale. There are organizations who are doing great work in the leadership space, but programs like that are labor intensive and they can be expensive, I'll be honest. And so programs like the one that I came through require financing by your home institution and the institution that is your host institution. They both make a financial commitment on your behalf. So I was gone for a year, but my home institution didn't have the benefit of my day-to-day work, but they still paid for me to be away because they believed that I could contribute something to higher education. Most institutions, like the ones that you and Dr. Joe were describing earlier, can't afford to do that. Or a host institution can't afford to say, hey, Liz, come be with us for a year and get some learning in. So we have to cultivate programs like these within our institutions. At one school that I worked previously, and this gets to the second part of your question about what can we do, we have to be growing our own talent, and there are a lot of models for grow your own programs, and we have to be able to extend ourselves. When we get into seats like the one that I'm fortunate to sit in, we have to be willing to go the extra mile, to give up a little sleep, to be able to extend ourselves to ourselves, to be able to be available to people who want to learn. This is how Leadership Catalyzer and what I'm trying to do with other leaders got started, is because I see opportunities to teach institutions how to do this kind of work. We've got to be able to grow our own programs across institutions. When I came into this seat, it didn't surprise me, but I found my calendar full of young, hungry professionals, particularly women of color, Black and Brown and other, who just said, I want a shot too. How do I get a chance? And to your point about equity, if someone isn't known within their institution, they often don't get an opportunity. And we have to move beyond that kind of paradigm too, so that we democratize the playing field, so that there is a pipeline. we need the bench strength as well. We lose people that get new opportunities. We need to be able to tap in and say, hey, I'm mentoring, you know, we're mentoring these 500 people across the college. And in that group, Liz is a standout. Let's give her an opportunity, a shot at interim or something of that sort. So we've got some work to do.
So glad you said that. I want to pass it back to Joe, but I just want to emphasize something you said.
She almost passed it back.
I almost did, but I want to emphasize.
Sure.
Dr. Kenyo, something that you just said, which actually kind of brought a tear to my eye when you said voice for the voiceless and voice for the marginalized, because I think that is the heart of as Black women and leaders and change makers, really what it's all about. So I just want to say that I appreciate you and your work because it's so important, and thank you for doing what you do.
Bless you. Thank you. That means a lot. This is calling, right? I've written about this on LinkedIn. The work of the presidency looks glamorous if people just see people out and about and doing functions and showing up in the community, but people don't get to see the tough conversations you have to have and the challenging personnel and other decisions you have to make. And that's the kind of thing that we have to give some exposure to, the politics. Those are things that are real. We have to do it with discretion, but those are the kinds of conversations we have to be able to have to really help prepare people for next levels of leadership so that they can confidently step into those seats. I'm sorry, Dr. Joe. Can you tell I like this? This
is I can tell, and I'm going to ask you a question right along the same line so you can keep the talk going.
Okay.
I don't think we've ever asked anyone this before. We've interviewed, I don't know what, Liz, like we released 65 episodes with
60,
college,
but we have more that have not been released yet. So
this is probably 75 60. Presidents that we've interviewed all across the country and in every context you can imagine. I don't think we've ever asked anyone this question. I'm going to ask you and give me your thoughts. The average tenure of a college and university president is like a little over 5 years now. It's come down greatly from, I think it was an average of 8 or 9, it came down. And this was even pre-pandemic. The pandemic has sped that up. I think it's even less now. Why do you think that is? Do you think it is because of what you said, because of how hard it is behind the scenes? Does it wear on you over time? And it's just like, hey, that's it. Do you think boards see opportunity in change because people don't stay beyond certain time periods, or maybe the board wants, you know, maybe the president is selected for the time period of the institution and that time period passes? What are your thoughts?
First of all, I don't know why you haven't asked that question. That's a phenomenal question.
Second that you brought up. That's why.
I'm impressed. I've got multiple answers, but they go in different directions. So let's talk pre-pandemic and then we'll talk post-pandemic. Pre-pandemic, at least in my experiences, and this cuts across the ACE Fellowship, Harvard Leadership Institute, MLE program, Future Presidents Institute with AACC and other professional development programs, and this is postdoc, that there's a lot of people who have indicated that they're very comfortable being at the vice president level, but to come to that president level or a chancellor level where the buck stops with them is not a place where people want to live. They see the kind of pressure and scrutiny that is aligned with the position, and some people decide that that's just not what they want to do. There's also just the realization that people make real and valid decisions about what they want for their personal lives and family lives and think a lot about balance. So there are those things. There are the political realities, and I think what ties to that is really the return on investment and cost benefit analysis. To step into this kind of role, you really have to know your why. And again, this goes back a little bit to my last answer. Your why can't be that I want to be called president or I want to be called chancellor. Your why has to be aligned with your true north and your values, because there are too many things that compete for your time, your attention. There are too many tough choices. I think about when I was doing the ACE fellowship, it was in 2015, 2016. And a lot of one of my fellows was doing her fellowship in that same year at Mizzou. We also do our travels, not just domestically to meet with leaders, but we traveled internationally as well. While we were in India, she got a text that indicated the kind of conversations around race that were going on at Mizzou at the time. These are tough, thorny conversations that leaders have to be in the midst of. And a lot of folks aren't quite sure how to navigate that. We need, Liz, you're absolutely right. We need more professional development. We need things that allow us to test not just our mettle, but our ability to develop a cohort of colleagues where we can have a safe space to test ideas and issues so that we're not testing them when we're on center stage. So I could go on about this all day, but I'll leave it at that. Now, post-pandemic, what I would share with you is all of that accelerated. I started my first year July of 2019, and of course, within that academic year, we went into, everything that we've gone into with remote work and the pandemic. I know for certain, I'm grateful that I'm a part of a system where we operate, we work together, and we make decisions jointly. But I also know that I would not be as well prepared for this seat and to lead our largest campus in the absence of some of the preparation that I've had and the great colleagues that I have to work with.
Are you using the right mix of channels to get in front of your audience? Is your messaging personalized and delivered in a medium your audience responds to? Are you spending more time building reports than listening in on what your audience wants? These are not easy questions to answer. That's why our great friends at MDT Marketing are offering a free audit of your marketing efforts. Head to www.mdtmarketing.com/edup and submit your information for your free consultation today. Look, guys, you got nothing to lose. It's free. I don't know why you wouldn't want a free audit to tell you what you're doing, whether it's effective, and how you can make some incremental changes that can make a big difference moving forward. That's www.mdtmarketing.com/edup.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because it's your pandemic experience. When you say the word accelerated, it accelerated your experience by how many years, right? Because you were faced with a number of issues that it might have taken you 20 years to experience, and you experienced them all in 20 months.
Oh my goodness.
How are you? Are you just want to flop over and lay down some days? You just go, you know what? I'm so tired today from dealing with this pandemic. Or, right? Or are you so worried about getting students back because of all of the challenges facing them that you feel the adrenaline to help? I mean, it is a little bit of both sometimes.
This is real talk. I don't feel worried. I feel energized by the work. I've said to more than one person, these are the times that really show leaders who they are. And so it's been an exciting time to lead. There are things that, and I've talked to people nationally about this, that have taken some institutions where historically it would have taken them a long time to make decisions and to move things. We moved very quickly under these conditions and were able to do a lot of great work for students. For example, the kinds of things that we've been able to do with deploying devices for students and hotspots and getting COVID relief to students. Our second COVID relief package for our district, I can't even $49 million. I mean, huge amounts of money and resources. So I feel excited and honored and thrilled to be a part of this historic time in higher education. Is it tiring? Sure, but I'll add to that. I lost my dad in December of 2019. I got married in April. So, I mean, I also added some other things to my plate in the middle of it too, that, but that's kind of who I am as a person. I just take on more things. It's good. It's an exciting time. and a great time to be alive. I just feel grateful.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your dad, but congratulations on on your good news on your marriage.
Thank you.
Let me ask one more, Liz, and then she sends me secret messages on my phone and tells me to be quiet, Kenya. She says, Joe, that's enough. Let me you're taking over. Stop.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
I want to ask you, we had Dr. Christina Royal on not too long ago. She's the president of Holyoke Community College. She was really outspoken. She did a lot of real talk, and I appreciate that because that's what we love on this podcast. So thank you for giving us the 100, keeping it real with us. But what about the stigma that comes with community colleges? That she was big on that. She was talking about that. You know, the world is changing. Community colleges are really, if anyone doesn't think, even if you don't believe in the value of a college degree, which I'm going to ask you about in a little bit, or Liz will, you have to believe that community colleges are going to play some very, very important role in making our economy recover, contributing to people finding new skills and going into the workforce without investing lots of years in you know, their higher education. You have to believe that. Community colleges, that's what they were built for.
Sure.
Her point was that there's still the stigma that it's parents, is it 18-year-olds, is it people look at community college and go, oh, that's community college, versus community college is a way for me to reduce my debt, achieve the same way I would at any other institution, and then transfer to a four-year at the same institution I would have gone to in the first place, but I saved, you know, 2 years worth of cost, for example, because I went to community college. Is there a stigma? Do you feel like there is? And or do you think that community colleges as a whole are overcoming that?
I think it's a work in progress. I do think it's there. I think we would, it would be silly not to acknowledge that it exists. I do feel that our sector has a great opportunity to communicate not just our value, but what's different from what people imagine we're about. In one community, I heard folks from the Rotary and the Chambers say, you guys are our best kept secret, and we should not be. When people know about community colleges, and not just from what they hear in the national landscape, but right there, we're supposed to be the community's college, right? But right there in the community, when they understand what we do for economic impact, when they understand how we change families' lives, when they can see a difference really in job opportunity and earnings that people can secure, then there's a felt experience that someone can understand. When they come to our campuses, for a lot of people, they've not even been on the campus. They've not experienced the facilities. They know what they experienced 25, 30 years ago or what they heard about. The whole landscape has changed, but we've not done as much as we can to really communicate all the things that we've done to enhance what we're able to deliver. And that's our responsibility.
Yeah, Liz?
I want to talk about the student body, because I noticed that the student body is very racially balanced. You have about 30% Latinx, you have about 17% Black students, you have about 30% white students, you have just a good mixture and balance. How, especially post-pandemic, but even before and now pre-pandemic, even before, I should say, and now post-pandemic, how are you balancing the student needs? You talked about the devices and hotspots. I think something that surprised a lot of people was the digital divide, the access, the students not being able necessarily to have a quiet space to just log on to the internet. What are some of the things that you're doing to help these students? And I think one of the things that we highlighted a lot on the podcast is the fact that in higher ed, sometimes we haven't been as able to balance the needs of the students that are first generation students that are coming from marginalized backgrounds, and help them in terms of the retention rates and just special support mechanisms, wraparound services. So what are your thoughts on that? And what are some of the things that you're doing at Tarrant College and then working for your students.
Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you what I feel really excited about. Part of what attracted me is our chancellor, Dr. Jean Giovannini, was really instrumental in starting a series of charrettes with external support to help the college reimagine where we might be. And this started 4 or 5 years ago, and it led to where we are in terms of what we call our three goals and our eight principles. And that's the strategic foundation of our college, to be one college, to be student ready, and to serve our community. And then eight principles, and I lead one of them called the student experience, not just for my campus, but across the entire district. And what I love about that is that we're talking about how we align all of our campuses. We have five physical campuses and one fully online campus, where we're thinking about who are all of our students, not just who we may have traditionally served, but what do people know about us? How can we move beyond what we've assumed about what students know and provide them with greater access to information from the time they even start in middle school? What are we providing to work with those communities? How are we working with parents? How do we see our non-traditional students? How do we see just every sector? How are we opening up new access categories? And how do we serve those students with fidelity when they come to us, so that we don't assume that they understand based upon the middle class norms upon which higher ed was built, but that we take a step back and say, let's just make everything about how you come into college and how you experience college abundantly clear. And we are doing a work to just, it's all hands on, and it's cross sector, it's people involved from all across the college. And we're saying, let's not make any assumptions about what people know. Let's no longer be wedded to the nomenclature of the college or what have been traditional silos of how the college does business. So for example, I've got a financing a TCC education team that I've put together that now brings foundation scholarships, our business services, and our financial aid area together. Those report to three different areas of the college, but now they're speaking one language, and we're figuring out what is the language our students need us to speak, and how are we helping them access the college? How are we having a concierge experience for students so that we have someone guide them, whether electronically or personally, to move from being transactional to being relational? I got a lot more there, but we're doing a lot of those kinds of things across eight different areas of the college to reinvent, reimagine how students experience TCC so that they're more apt to graduate.
I want to pass it back to Joe, but I'd love to just emphasize what you said about, because these are two things. I have a Gen Z college student. She's 22. And one of the things that's really, I think, very different about this generation, and it's not, you know, negative or positive. I think it's just every generation is different. Mm-hmm. But that speaking one language and the concierge experience.
Isn't that great?
That is so awesome and really speaks to centrally what we need to do for this generation of student. That's I just feel as though for me as a Gen Xer, my parents didn't go to college. They just threw me up at the state school, drove back home 7 hours away. And it was like,
good luck.
Figure it out. Good luck.
Right.
And this generation of student, that just doesn't resonate with them, you know?
It does not, because they've been accustomed. I'm a Gen Xer as well. They've been accustomed to a certain level of support and experience. So I talked about getting married in the last year. I also became a bonus mom a year ago, and we have a senior this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm in a happy place. We have a senior this year, and she's going to, she's planning to start college in the fall. And so I'm seeing all of this with fresh eyes. We bought some cars from Carvana during the pandemic, and that model that Carvana has. So from our lens, you know, there's CRM and there are things that you do behind the scenes to track where people are. But from the consumer end, I just need to know that somebody's going to tell me when my license plates are coming, that I'm in the pipeline, that my finance is set up. Our students deserve the same kind of experience.
No, Joe has plenty to say about that, because he's all about the one-stop shop and how we need to streamline stuff and the student as a customer. So I know you have plenty to say about that, Joe.
I was actually going to say something about you getting dropped off at that university that you attended and never going to class. But
I know you mean the University of Florida.
Oh boy. Is this a Gators moment?
Go Gators.
There's one in every episode, Dr. Kenya.
I understand.
Well, listen, my question, well, I want to go back to the student experience that you're leading. Sure. The student experience efforts. You know, one back in the old days, I would say, I don't know, maybe not so much for me, but definitely for you, Liz, way, way back. But
way back
at the beginnings of education. Back in the early 2000s, when the for-profit colleges and universities mm-hmm. and career colleges were really in their heyday, so to speak, mm-hmm. I worked for one that had approximately 5,000 students. It grew from 300 to 5,000 over a 10-year mm-hmm. period. Now, and there were a lot of them. One of the areas that they capitalized on were community colleges. Students attending a community college and not being successful because they were an at-risk student. And back in the old days, the community colleges didn't have the infrastructure necessarily mm-hmm. to service the adult student that's reskilling, that has problems, and so on. Let's advance now 10, 15 years later. I think community colleges are really primed to service adult students, built to service adult students. Mm-hmm. Is that something always at the forefront of your planning of how am I retaining this student? What are we doing to keep them on the board here? What services, what extra services can we offer? What kind of phone calls can we make? Because do people even call anymore? What kind of text blasts can I have? I mean, you're always thinking about technology and touching and nudging.
Yeah. Not touching. I don't know.
You know what I mean.
We'll say that
touching as in like touching you through technology.
I know what you mean. I'm teasing. But I feel like you've been sitting in our meetings. That is constantly the conversation. How do we do this at scale as efficiently as possible in a way that resonates with that particular group of students? And you know, there's a conundrum. So on one hand, students say, I'm an adult student. I want more connection, engagement, but I'm also too busy to connect and engage. So trying to find the balance between those, there isn't a one size fits all. So trying to find as many ways to connect as possible and not look for a one size fits all answer is where we're landing. Again, I love TCC for so many reasons, but because we have the advantage to see things at scale is really appealing for someone like me who loves all of the breadth of higher education and all that it can answer and can do for our communities.
Thanks for saying that, because one thing Liz and I have talked about this a million times, but we always come back to this moment where somebody who's attending college, doesn't matter what kind of college you're in, but retention sometimes means different things to different people. To those that have mm-hmm. worked with at-risk students, mm-hmm. it's a $50 phone bill. It's a electric bill. It's a minor car accident that is the difference between mm-hmm. staying in school and not. So when you think retention, it doesn't mean moving necessarily in, you know, term to term, where you're moving a student from one That's term right. to the next. It's, can I keep the student who has life happen to them through mm-hmm. the next week? And that makes you much better at design.
So true. We definitely have built upon the work of Dr. Sarah Goldwick Rabb and some of what's been implemented from her research by institutions like Amarillo College and Dr. Russell Lowry Hart to understand $500 is the threshold that's really make or break for students. And even before we are able to access CARES Act funding, we set up an emergency fund called Eliminating Barriers in the fall of 2019, where that became the threshold. $500, a lower threshold to even apply. We moved it through our student conduct officer. And the reason for that is that that's the person that leads our care teams for our college, so that we could deploy other resources of support to envelop the student. Not just with the financial resource, but with other connections to advisors, counselors, community resources to ensure that they move from retention toward real completion. And that completion being realized not just as the associate's degree for us and movement toward transfer or job, but even those micro credentials that help them become more gainfully employed along the way as they're moving toward ultimate goals. So we're thinking more holistically across multiple areas: academic affairs, how we engage as a community, how we work with businesses, how we work with our academic affairs. So again, it's an exciting time to be working to make a difference. And Dr. Jo, I'm somebody who's been in higher ed for a long time too, so it's fun and exciting.
Not as long as Liz, though.
No one's been in high. I was there at the very beginnings with Ben Franklin.
I came up with the term higher education.
I mentioned that.
I love it.
I want to ask Dr. Kenya, what is the biggest lesson or tip or strategy? You've been through so many leadership trainings, and you're a wealth of knowledge when it comes to leadership and nurturing leadership, and how you've been able to exemplify some of these really key strategies over your career. What's the one tip or strategy you would say for our listeners out there that are aspiring leaders or are leaders in their college and are just balancing and juggling so many different responsibilities and so many different, having to pivot in so many different ways and be agile? What are some words of wisdom or jewels of knowledge that you'd love to share with our listeners?
So there are two things that come to mind. One is really short, and it's rest. That you we do better, we serve more effectively from a place of being rested. When we're not rested, we make hasty and often not our best decisions. And then the other one would be one of my favorite quotes, which comes from Eleanor Roosevelt, which says, she said, "You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every opportunity in which you stop to look fear in the face." She says, "You must do the thing you think you cannot do." And so I would encourage people just to be reminded every time someone says no, just look for another opportunity. Sometimes we feel like we can't do something, or someone will say something is impossible, but our students deserve us to be possibility promoters. So keep trying.
Love those gems. Thank you for those.
All right, Dr. Kenny, you get the, we call these the final two. We ask every guest these same two questions.
Okay.
Number one, what did we miss about Tarrant County College that you want to talk about, projects you're working on? This is, we call this the plug section. So anything that you want to plug and talk about. And then number two, what is the future of higher education going to look like?
Sure. So TCC, I would say, will be at the forefront of helping higher ed understand ways in which we've got to move beyond these silos, and we've got to get in each other's business, that we've got to get in each other's lanes, and we'll be at the forefront of helping institutions think of how to transform the work that they do by stepping away from legacy systems and platforms and structures. The future of higher education is, there's so many things. One, I don't think that the kinds of categories of institutions that exist will look the same in the future. We're gonna have to get away, again, I love collective impact. So we've gotta work with business and industry, but we've gotta work with our nonprofits. Churches have answers, other people have answers. We can't always believe that we have the only solutions. We've gotta be open to other solutions that are out there. I talked about us being economic drivers. We've got to see the business of higher ed, and you referenced the word agile. If we're not more agile, higher ed will miss opportunities. We have to be, this will get me in trouble, be less enamored with the committee and our own voices, and more enamored with what our students need. That has got to change.
How dare you? How dare you talk about
our being enamored with our voices? We love our voices.
We love our voices.
Committees. Who doesn't love a really slow, populated committee?
Oh my goodness! I worked somewhere once that had a committee on committees, so I understand.
I thought that was just a joke. Joe is always talking about those, and I'm like, I'm just lowly faculty, so I've never in those meetings.
A committee of three when two people call in sick is the best.
You got it. But we got to stop the us versus them. I mean, if nothing else, the pandemic has showed us, has shown us, we all have to be, we're all in this together, and we have to be rowing in the same direction. I love that about collective impact, because it gives us shared agenda, shared measurement, the opportunity to work together on something that is of equal value to us.
Hey, everybody. We hope you enjoyed that episode of The EdUp Experience. To learn more about The EdUp Experience, please visit our website at www.edupexperience.com and subscribe to our email list. Please share this podcast, head over to Apple, and please give us a rating and review. We appreciate your feedback. And of course, subscribe to The EdUp Experience so you're notified when our episodes drop. Here at The EdUp Experience, our goal is to make education your business. Thanks for listening.